This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Republican Louisiana Senator David Vitter, who joins me now to talk about his thoughts from the President's State of the Union address, his own vision for creating jobs with the unemployment rate still around 10% in this country. And we'll talk to him about the latest developments in his effort to seat Massachusetts Senator-elect Scott Brown as quickly as possible. And Senator, it's always great to have you with us.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be with you.
Well, let's start first of all with what you've sent to the White House today. It's the no-cost stimulus plan to create jobs. I know you've introduced a version of this before. Explain for our listeners again what it is.
Yeah, Greg, I think everybody across America feels that job one for Congress and the president should be jobs, getting this economy moving. And I certainly agree with that. That's been my top priority throughout this past year. Rather than just continue to drop taxpayer money from helicopters, we need a different approach. And I've joined with 14 other U.S. senators, 40 U.S. House members, around what we call the no-cost stimulus plan. It's focused on domestic energy, opening up access to drilling and production of more domestic energy. That'll do a number of things. First of all, it'll create great, high-paying U.S. jobs here at home. Secondly, it'll do it without costing taxpayer dollars. In fact, it creates new federal revenue because any new production brings new royalty into the federal treasury. Third, we devote some of that new revenue to working on research and technology and development of new alternative energy sources. So it's a win-win-win all around, particularly on the jobs front. We need a new approach to jobs, not just these stimulus plans that are, you know, spending $1 trillion at a time in terms of the last stimulus and not creating a lot of jobs.
Senator, any estimation on just how effective this could be? What kind of numbers you'd be able to create?
It could absolutely create millions of jobs, and again, without costing taxpayer dollars, actually producing more federal revenue. We're the only advanced country in the world that has major energy reserves, which 95% of which we put off limits. Nobody else does that. We need to stop that. We need to drill here, drill now, to help increase our energy independence.
Sir, you and I have talked about energy quite a bit over the past several months. You were there on Wednesday night, I imagine, hearing the president's speech. And a lot, I know, in your party, a lot of members were eager and positive to hear him talk about nuclear power plant production as well as a potential expansion of offshore exploration. What was your reaction to all that?
Well, I applaud all that, but obviously the devil's in the details, and we're not going to move forward, particularly on offshore exploration, if he also pushes his tax increases on energy companies, which he promised in the same speech. So his administration has never produced anything positive with regard to oil and gas or nuclear. I hope that's changing now. I really do. We'll see.
Senator, I know you weren't in Baltimore because it was a House Republican retreat where the president was today. Many of the members simply pointing out point blank to the president that they have ideas on critical issues like energy, like health care, like job creation and deficit reduction that the Democratic leadership just simply won't acknowledge or entertain in any significant way. The president claimed that that was not his approach, but what's the reality on the Senate side?
Well, unfortunately, it's been the same. It's been a completely far-to-the-left partisan approach by the president and his allies in Congress, House and Senate, and that has to change. Fundamentally, that has to change. You know, the president's bipartisan rhetoric is great, but it needs to be matched with reality, and so far it hasn't been.
Senator, the president is hoping that he can get Republicans to see his way on a number of key issues. The Republicans, I know, were hoping for the president to moderate a little bit in his speech on Wednesday night. That didn't really happen. So are we basically where we were before all this anticipation for the State of the Union? Did anything fundamentally change in that speech?
I don't think so. You know, we all know the president's a great speaker. What I was real interested in is how well he's been listening or how good a listener he is. I didn't give him high grades based on that speech, unfortunately. He did talk a little bit more about the problem of spending and debt. He talked about this modest spending freeze. I'm all for that, and I'm also for going a whole lot further. But on the flip side, he really dug in and was very defensive about his same old positions on the bailouts, which he wants to continue, on the stimulus, which he defended to the hilt, even with 10% unemployment, and on health care. He even defended and dug in on his version of Obamacare, even though the American people clearly want a different approach.
Senator, what do you make on the health care front? We've heard talk about reconciliation. The House passes the Senate version, and then there's a separate bill to put in changes that they think are necessary. What are you hearing? Is that going to happen, or is this basically dead on arrival?
I really think the president's allies and the president would do that at their peril. To me, that would just be like throwing gasoline on the flames of voter anger and discontent, because voters have been saying for months, most dramatically with the Massachusetts election, that they don't want this approach. They don't like this lurch to the left. They don't like this corrupt deal-making. And everything you describe, which Nancy Pelosi has been talking about, would just be more of the same, ramming it down our throats.
The last topic, Senator, and you mentioned it briefly in your last response there, and that's the results of the Massachusetts Senate race. A little over a week ago, you and I talked, and you've launched a website, Seat Scott Now, and at this point, about a week and a half after the election, he has not been seated. What are you hearing about when that might happen?
Well, the date I'm hearing is February 11th. I think that's outrageous, an outrageously long period after the election. You know, a lot of folks, including Teddy Kennedy in the early 1960s, were seated the day after they were elected when it wasn't close. Now, I mean, the good news is it's clear that we're not going to have health care votes before Scott Brown is seated, but we are having significant votes. This very week in the Senate, we had votes on the Bernanke nomination and votes on increasing the debt limit. So I really think there's no excuse for this long wait. And Scott Brown should be seated immediately. And that's what my online petition is about. That's what our website is about, seatscottnow.com.
Seatscottnow.com. Two-part, very quick follow-up before we let you go, Senator.
Sure.
What reason are Harry Reid and others giving for waiting that long? And is there a defined rule about how long the interim senator can stay when there is a duly elected replacement?
Well, Harry Reid is pointing to Massachusetts election certification, which does take a while. Problem with that is there are plenty of precedents where a person who's won an election that isn't very close gets seated before formal certification. What the Senate accepts to seat a person is up to the Senate. So it's basically up to Harry Reid. And I think he's just dragging his feet. I don't think there's a good reason for it.
Senator, we'll keep on top of it. Thanks so much for being with us as always.
Thanks, Greg, very much.
You too, sir. Louisiana Senator David Vitter. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.